VorpalNetwork.com.
This episode of The Tome Show is brought to you by Noble Knight Games, where Out of Print is available again.
And listeners like you, thanks for using The Tome's Amazon store.
Hi, this is Wolfgang Bauer, author of Forge of War, Expedition to the Demon Web Pits, and a whole lot of independent games you probably don't know. You don't listen to The Tome, you're a sad, sorry man.
Welcome to The Tome, episode 166. The Tome is a D&D news, reviews, and interviews show, and I'm your Tome host, Jeff Greiner.
And I'm Tracy Hurley, and in this episode, we're going to brave the aftermath of the big mistake and hope the Large Hadron Collider didn't turn us into a bunch of vampiric speedsters as we brave Garroworld.
And amazingly, it was getting all kinds of crazy digital static as you were saying that, so it almost sounds like you're in Garroworld.
Awesome.
And we should go ahead and introduce our guest for this episode. I mentioned that if this was This Week in Tech, I feel like it's one of those episodes where we bring back all the old crew. And so sitting in for Kevin Rose is Dave Chalker.
Hey, hey. My three arms are waving hello.
Excellent. And sitting in for...
That was a mutation, too.
Yeah, I got it. Yeah, yeah. And sitting in for Dvorak, we have our own curmudgeon Mike Shea.
Yeah, Mike Shea couldn't make it, so he's been replaced with an inflatable man.
Very good. I'm glad that we've all sort of jumped right into the theme of the episode. Let's go ahead and jump into some news. First, I think Tracy wanted to remind us about the contest.
Yep. This month, you can call into the Tome Bizline 919 BizTome with your favorite accessories, tokens, applications, etc. for your game table. And you can visit the forums to tell us how relationships have played a role in your games.
Awesome. And what can they win?
A bunch of stuff.
should I use this as an opportunity to mention the new prizes that I haven't talked to anybody about yet?
Yeah. All right. I'd love to hear about that.
Because I don't know that I've confirmed it with you either. So it's a surprise to Tracy. We have a new prize supporter to announce. It actually happened towards the end of last month, but we got a little behind on our release schedule. So the new prizes come from the Open Design Company, run by Wolfgang Bauer. He is supplying us with one copy of Courts of the Shadowfey, one copy of Soldiers of Fortune, one Kobold Guide to Game Design Volume 3, all shipped to any winners within the U.S., which is true for any of the contest prizes. In case you haven't read the fine print, which isn't actually any smaller, on the website, if you live outside the U.S. and you win, you have to pay your own shipping or let somebody else take it, because I'm not paying $700 to ship it to Zimbabwe. So, that's the contest. Are we excited about the new prizes?
Yes.
Yay.
He actually, at one point, Tracy, he offered, or we talked about maybe including Lost City in the mix, but then he was hesitant because it's still in editing, so.
Right, which is understandable.
Right.
I was going to say, Soldiers of Fortune, I've heard very good things about it, including that it can increase your luck with the ladies.
Is that just
Yeah, I got my paper copy of Soldier of Fortune.
Yeah?
And, It hasn't helped so far, but jury's still out.
It hasn't? You live close enough to the person who made that claim to take it out on him.
You know what? You know.
Yeah, he's kind of a tough guy.
If the book had been written by his brother, Mike James, then I bet it really would have helped with the ladies. But
yeah,
Matt James is a bit of a fraud.
Mike James is really, he's got his S together.
Good. Thank you. All right.
Yeah, you're welcome. Want to keep the clean tag.
Exactly. I have students who occasionally find out about the show and listen to it. So let's go on to D&D news. The biggest D&D news of the last millennium. Dave, you know what it is?
No.
It's truly epic.
Huh. I don't know. I mean, Who really needs advice on how to run Epic Games, you know?
I hate you.
Well, Wizards of the Coast doesn't think you need advice on running Epic Games, so it must be true.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like the monsters are more difficult to run, or the plot lines are more complicated, or it's, you know, you need a storyline that involves killing a lot of gods. Who needs any of that stuff in an advice book?
It's pretty straightforward.
Although, you know, I am getting into Epic Tier with my campaign soon. Tracy, if I needed some advice, where might I go?
I don't know. I think you're out of luck.
I think so. Yep. All right. Well, moving on.
Oh.
Mike, tell us about SlyFlourish.com/epic.
Oh, I thought you'd never ask. So I really had a good time writing my Sly Flourish Dungeon Master Tips book. And I ran through a 1-30 campaign, and I had a pretty rough time keeping things challenging and keeping the story going and keeping everybody engaged and not having my game turn into a 3-hour-long battle each time we sat down at the table. And I saw that there wasn't really anything else that talked about it. So I wrote a book called Sly Flourish's Running Epic Tier D&D Games. And it's a very short book. It's about 50 pages on a PDF, or about 60 to 70 pages on a small format. It's available on Kindle. It's available as an ebook that you can buy direct and then put on your iPad or your Nook or any other device that reads EPUB. And hopefully we'll help people run Epic Games.
And I can say good things about it. I read a not quite final version of it. I have the final version, but I already read it once, so I haven't gone through and read it a second time. But I know as I'm approaching my Epic Tier game, it made me start considering some things. And ironically, for my next session, I started using some of your advice, but my party's not quite Epic Tier yet. They're actually 20th level, so they're one level away, and I think I kind of kicked their ass.
Right. Really?
Yeah.
But it felt epic.
Were there deaths?
Not this session, but the previous session there were. I was doing a lot more of the using terrain effects and that kind of stuff that you recommended.
Sure. Sure. Yeah, I think that you know, it's a little sad that it's D&D is actually a lot more lethal in the lowest, you know, the lower 5 levels than it is at any other point in the game. And you know, it feels like the challenge doesn't really stay as you get higher and higher. So it's nice to hear that people really feel threatened, because it can be significantly difficult to threaten players.
Yeah.
Above level 21, they have so many little tools in their tool belt to prevent and avoid and inflict extreme amounts of damage. So so it's kind of cool to hear that. You know, a group actually goes, oh, you know, some bad things are happening.
Right on.
And it's still really hard. I mean, yeah.
And people can find that at?
SlyFlourish.com/epic.
That is a totally epic
$4.
URL. And it's $4. Why wouldn't you buy it?
$4. Yeah. It's nothing. For the price of a cup of expensive coffee.
Sweet. Tracy. I hear there's some new articles being published over at Wizards.com.
Yeah, on their website, they have a couple new ones. One's by Mike Merles called Legends and Lore. He did his introduction article that a lot of people really liked. And Chris Perkins has The Dungeon Master Experience. And that one had Surprise Epic Goblins was the first one that I saw. And they're both pretty good.
And because we on the previous episode we talked to Bart Carroll and we talked about how some articles were going to start coming out that weren't behind the paywall. You didn't have to be a subscriber. Are these some of those that are free?
Yeah, these are the free ones.
Right on. So
available.
Were they good?
Sorry.
What's the feedback been?
I liked them. A lot of people liked them. I mean, some people didn't, but I really enjoyed the Epic Goblins one because he talks about, you know, having an encounter that your players can just wipe pretty quickly, like just get rid of all the monsters pretty quickly and see how far they've progressed. And I like that tip a lot. So,
right on. And I know Mike had some thoughts on specifically Perkins doing this article.
Yeah, just we don't hear much from him. He's not, you know, I think we all love his work. We love to see him working with the Penny Arcade guys and killing off Will Wheaton's characters and stuff like that. But he's a relatively private guy. We don't, if he has a Twitter account, I don't know what it is. He doesn't appear to have a blog that anybody knows about. And I think that's actually, you know, besides building great lore around him, I think it's pretty cool. I think it's cool that he appears to be focusing his attention where it matters the most, which is something I always admire in people.
Right on. I mean, he's got a job that I imagine keeps him pretty busy, so not getting distracted by other stuff is probably a good idea.
Right.
All right, well, cool. The only other thing I wanted to mention in the D&D news section here is the Dark Sun comic, only because we did a review episode of the D&D comic, and I said, you know, when I get the Dark Sun comic, I'll mention it and talk a little bit about it. Has anybody else read it, or is it just me?
I read the issue zero, but I haven't read the actual comic, the issue one.
Yeah, I read same way.
And Tracy hates comic books and all people who read them, so...
And dungeons.
And dungeons.
And dungeons and all people who play in them. Yeah, I get it.
I love dragons.
Good. So, yeah, the Dark Sun comic. Issue zero was pretty decent. Issue one, they actually did some unique and interesting things with the actual physical product. It's on sort of a rough paper. It doesn't have the sort of the glossy sheen to it. It feels like it's something that you would find in Athos if you were to find a comic book in Athos. That said, I don't know. It was okay. I like the normal D&D comic more. It just the D&D comic has more humor and a story that I'm more interested in, whereas this Dark Sun comic said a lot and did a lot, but didn't do much to actually advance any story. It was mostly just the two main characters getting to know each other for a whole issue. So, you know, I've read worse comics, and I'm you know, I have a hard time judging a comic until the storyline is done. So I'll hold off my final judgment on it. But right now, I like the D&D comic more than I like the Dark Sun comic.
So that's what I've been hearing from everybody who's been reading both of them.
That seems to be the standard reaction.
Yeah. You know, I mean, the D&D comic itself is written by a totally awesome writer who's also written a bunch of actual D&D stuff, so that might be a big heads up there. And, you know, Dark Sun can be a little bit tougher to get into in the first place if, sure, you know, just as a general, like, coming into it for the first time, trying to teach people what it is. But, yeah, that's a consensus I've heard. It would be awesome, though, if they, like, you know, polybagged it and then just dumped a whole bunch of sand into the comic, so when you open it up, like, sand went everywhere.
That'd be awesome. you'd have a lot of nerd rage, and people's heads would explode. At, you know, you're doing what to my comic? And this has to last forever.
It's totally immersive, though. Yeah, like, suspension of disbelief, like, doesn't matter. There's sand everywhere.
Maybe I'll pack mine in.
They would.
When I bag mine,
yeah, they would preserve the comic forever with the sand inside, and it would be this massive like heirloom that would pass from generation to generation. This is the original one that still has the sand in it.
Still with sand, like the old original Dark Sun box set that had the cloth map.
Right.
Yep.
Oh, and you could get booster packs of sand.
booster envelope.
My collectible sand game.
Now in yellow.
$3.99.
All right. Well, Tracy, what are we talking about today?
Today we're talking about Gemworld. But before we get into a review, it's probably time to mention our sponsor for the episode, Noble Knight Games. They're a fantastic online store that also has a brick-and-mortar presence, so it's the best of both worlds. So, Jeff, what did you choose for this episode?
My pick for this episode, I think appropriately, is the Gemworld box set, the 4th edition Gemworld box set. It is only $22 at Noble Knight, so that's an entire game in a box, you know, soup to nuts, you get it all. And honestly, I hesitated on buying Dark Sun for a long, long time until some huge jerk face finally just said, look, Jeff, you can get it cheap from, you know, from places like your sponsor. and it's a whole game in a box, just shut up and buy it because it's made of awesome. I think that was Mike Shea who said that to me.
Yep.
So that is my first, or the first pick of the episode, but I think Tracy also had a pick to talk about.
Well, talking about boosters, you can also grab a whole bunch of the mutation cards. Noble Knight offers a box of Gemworld 24 packs for under $75. So that's $20 off.
Sweet. So you can, if you're into Gemworld and you want to have a lot of different mutation cards and really build up some interesting and crazy things going on, for $20 off, you can end up with pretty much all the packs you want. Has anybody bought Gemworld booster packs?
I bought two because I had to play with Dave the game.
No, I said you needed to pay me two booster packs to play with the privilege of playing with me.
I didn't understand.
I ran the Gemworld game day, of which Mike and his lovely wife were players. And they issued a buy two booster packs from the store that was hosting in order to play. And of course, you know, even though I was the GM, I didn't have to. I bought some there, and then I've run some other Gemworld events at other stores and bought some more. You know, and it's not even like a hey, I need to collect them all, or you know, I need to min-max my character. I just wanted more crazy cards in my deck. You know,
sweet, yeah. And, well, I guess I'll save that for the review. So let's go ahead and listen to the ad here, and then we'll get to that.
Noble Knight Games has been serving the needs of thousands of gamers worldwide since 1997. With a huge selection of over 30,000 unique products, including discounts on most in-print games of up to 50% off or more. Noble Knight Games is the place for out-of-print RPGs, board games, war games, collectible card games, miniatures, and all things game-related. They ship worldwide and will purchase or trade your titles you no longer need, new, or used. Your satisfaction is guaranteed. Just visit www.noblenight.com or visit our website for direct access to thousands of new, out-of-print, and in some cases, one-of-a-kind items.
All right, so let's talk Gemworld and its expansions, Famine in Fargo and Legion of Gold. First of all, let's obviously start with the original Gemworld box set. It is the box you need to play Gemworld. What's in it? Who wants to tell me what's in the Gemworld box?
I can speak to it.
Mike Shea, go.
So it's full of awesome. Like I told you before. It actually is it's probably the most complete RPG in a box that I've ever owned. It's got a really good thin rule book that has rules for running characters all the way up to level 10 from 1 to 10, and it's got 20 origins. I'm going to assume people know what origins are and that we're not really going to talk too much about it here, but origins are kind of like race class combinations all packed into one, and you get two of them with each of your characters. So it's got lots of origins in them. It's got the new WotC style character tokens for characters and monsters. It's got a pretty decent monster section that's got a fair bit of monsters in it. Two double-sided maps. Character sheets. It comes with character sheets right in the box. It comes with the power card deck for both Omega Tech, which are like items and weapons and treasure, and for Alpha Mutations, which are the crazy mutations that your characters get during the game. So I think the only thing it's missing is dice, which is almost unfortunate because like the red box came with dice. It kind of would have been nice for them to throw a set in there, but I imagine that the cost was pretty. You know, the margin was probably pretty narrow on it to throw dice in there. It has to go to halfway around the world for dice to be thrown in or some other weird globalization problem. But it's a pretty sweet box. And I think the list price is $40, but you can get it far cheaper than that at a number of places, including our sponsor.
All right, $22, noblenight.com. Actually, I do want to talk a little bit about some of the mechanics because I imagine there are still some people out there who aren't, you know, scouring the internet and reading all the blog posts about what Gemworld's all about. So, Dave, tell me about how Origins work and what they are, real quick.
Okay, so everybody in Gamer World is a mutant to some extent, and basically you've got these big charts full of different kind of, you know, mutant halves, and you roll twice, and you're like, oh, I'm a Hawkoid pyrokinetic, you know. So those give you the kind of the two pieces of your character to work with. They give you, like, a skill that you're good at. They bump up some of your stats. They tell you what kind of mutations you have more of an affinity for, and also give you your initial attack powers. So unlike something like D&D, where you'd pick from a big list of at-wills, you're given your two kind of core powers just by virtue of, you know, here are your two origins. And then you roll the rest of your stats, which is also fun. But when you get to that point, you kind of look at the two origin combination, you say, okay, you know, what does that mean? Like, what is this character? Because, you know, you can get some really bizarre combinations that, on first glance, you might think, oh, that's, you know, that doesn't work at all, or that would be really boring. But part of the fun is actually going into it and saying, okay, I have these two abilities, you know, how do they jive together? What kind of character would that be? And, you know, the flexibility of just having two origins means that you can go crazy and just determine, you know, this is the, like, even if you don't say, oh, I rolled the reptile origin, you can still say, well, my character's a reptile, and he breathes fire, and that's why he's a pyrokinetic, you know. You can spin it however you want to combine those origins into an interesting character concept, and the fact that it's all random, you know, kind of gets your brain working into an area that you might not necessarily go towards, you know, if you were just using point buy and choosing everything, you know.
Or I think one of my favorites was the, you could be a swarm of kittens. You know?
Oh, yes.
All the crazy combinations, which sounds like makes half of Gamer World, or at least half of the appeal of Gamer World seems to be in the crazy origin combinations. There's also some new mechanics in terms of card mechanics and how those play into the game, whether it be mutations or technology. Tracy, why don't you tell us about those?
So with the mutations, basically it gives you an additional power you can use for your character. You get at the beginning of the encounter, I think. And then every time you roll a one, you get a new one as well. And the great part about it is that you can decide to overcharge your mutation when you use it. And that is, you roll a d20, and if it's, I think, 1 through 9, something potentially kind of bad happens to your character in a crazy fun way. And then if you succeed, then you get to do more damage or whatever it is, something good. So they built the randomness into that mechanic as well.
Right on.
It's also, I'd say, a big part of the fun there, too, where, you know, in D&D, like, your powers might miss, you know, but they tend to not have big backfire effects. But overcharging powers like, oh, this power gives me extra AC. If I overcharge it, it'll give me even more AC. Oh, but I failed. I turned my skin to metal and I can't move now. You know, that kind of extra random effect. It's both risk and reward, and it can lead to some hilarious situations in the game.
And as I understand it, luckily... everybody but me here has actually played Gamer World. I own it and have read it, but I haven't actually had a chance to play it yet. As I understand it, it's that kind of stuff that can lead to some pretty hilarious character death on a fairly regular basis. Is that not true?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, totally. And the other thing is that it makes you want to try to do it. Because you're like, I want to kill my character here because it'll be so much fun for that to happen, and it's really quick to just roll up a new one anyway.
Yep.
Right on. So that brings up the issue of clearly there are some differences between Gamer World and D&D, both in feel and in mechanics. So in what way is it the same? Because it's, you know, it's called D&D Gamer World on the box cover.
The one of the things that I really like about it is that statistically the game is about the same. So if you look at defenses and attack scores and damage and things like that, it matches pretty directly to what you would see in a fourth edition game. Where this really helps out is with reskinning monsters. I'm a big fan of reskinning regular 4th edition monsters and turning them into nasty mutant Gamma World monsters. And you can do so in some pretty extreme ways. I wrote an article about turning a 4th level, I think it was a 4th level Black Dragon, into a cyborg ninja. And you can't get more extreme than that. And it actually played out really well and almost TPK'd the party. And it wasn't over, you know, even though it almost TPK'd the party, it was still, they were hitting it and it was hitting them and everything, all the math made sense.
So it's basically D&D, but they change, there's no class and race. Instead, you've got origins and your powers are more randomized. Is that the gist of it?
Yeah, there's a skill system too, and the skill system is very similar to the skill system in 4th edition, although the skills don't map one-to-one. There's a lot of skills in Gamma World that don't exist in 4th edition. I think there's fewer skills in Gamma World, but it works. It seems to work pretty well. You can do skill challenges, and I guess they don't even talk about that until the Famine and Fargo set. But you can, if you know what you're doing with 4th edition, it is extremely easy to drop into Gamma World and have fun.
Right on. And so then let's talk about those expansions then, unless Tracy was going to say something.
Well, I was just going to say that healing works a little differently. There isn't as much of it in general, and you can do second one basically as a minor for all characters.
Which I suppose not having the healing is okay. I guess not having that healing is okay because it's okay. Yeah. It's okay to die. That's just part of the game. It's not quite paranoia level of death, but as I understand it, dying is half the fun. And Dave, you were saying something about healing surges?
Yep, there are no healing surges. So you just get all your hit points back if you survive an encounter during a short rest, which I find means that it's not like D&D where you even try to, you know, throw in a certain number of combats to tax healing surges per day. You just have as many combats as you think makes sense because each one could be deadly, you know, or not.
Right on. Tracy, you were going to say something?
No, that's all.
Okay. So let's talk briefly about what's in the other two products as well, and then we'll talk about what Gamma World is good for, what you can do with it, and what we like and don't like and whatever. The first expansion was Famine in Fargo. Mike, what's in that box?
So Famine in Fargo has another 160-page rule book. This one is a lot of monsters. Hang on while I dig my copy out here. A bigger monster group. It also has a good-sized adventure. I think it's a 15 or 16 encounter. Yeah, it's a 16 encounter adventure in it. That's the actual Famine in Fargo adventure. But it also has 20 other origins. So you begin by rolling like a D6, and if you roll 1, 2, or 3, you pick an origin from the first book. If you roll a 4, 5, or 6, you draw from the second book. So the number of combinations of creatures, I believe, went up exponentially, if my math is right. So it's a pretty solid book. So the 160-page rule book, 4 more sheets of monster tokens. And I think it came with 2 more maps as well. And the maps are pretty critical. One thing that's hard about Gamma World is because it comes with 2 additional maps. One thing that's hard about Gamma World is it's so modern that, you know, your D&D maps won't work real well. So you're pretty reliant on the maps that come in Gamma World unless you guys figured out some tricks for additional maps. So, you know, for the maps alone, it really opens up a lot of other adventure possibilities.
Well, I know some of us can't play a game of D&D or whatever without pulling out extravagant terrain and what have you, but I think there are still quite a few people in the world who play the game without tiles. Yeah,
Dave's kind of a snob.
Right, you know, some of us pull out, you know, just grid paper or wet erase maps and draw them out that way. So I think Gamer World would work just as fine with those.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. What the adventure shows off is that, because I'm running Famine in Fargo now for a group, and each of the encounters uses one of the existing poster maps, whether it's one of the ones that's included in Famine or one of the ones from the original set. So it kind of shows off, even with just a few maps, all the possibilities you have.
Very cool. So, Dave, do you also have Legion of Gold?
I do have Legion of Gold. I haven't really gotten a chance to much look through it. There's a few other things in Famine 2.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
There are cryptic alliances, which are like secret societies. So if you really want to take your game in the paranoia direction, that's the way to do it. You know, there are both PC ones, which come on cards, which are, you know, like a secret society, like ones who worship mutations or ones who believe in the purity of psychic powers, that kind of thing. And then there are cards that, like, if you wanted to have everyone be a part of a different secret society, they tell you what the society is about and kind of give you a power that almost encourages you to screw over the other players in some ways. And then there's also a big list of NPC cryptic alliances and kind of minor alliances that fall in between that are plenty of good story fodder.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah, those are really interesting. Those can be kind of hit or miss at the table. When I got Famine and Fargo and we switched over to that adventure line, I had them all kind of run into shady characters. Each of them, while they were roaming around the town, ran into shady characters who all spoke to them of their agenda. And I handed out random, random cards for those. And, four of the players kind of read their card and looked at me and narrowed their eyes and smiled. And then one of them, who happened to be my wife, you know, looked at me and threw the card back at me. She wanted no part of hosing over the other players. So, you know, the irony was the other four were all very eager to do so. So I think they're actually a pretty fun thing. And you don't have to use them if you don't want to, but they're kind of a fun option to have in the game. They add a little bit of random character, you know, background to your guy.
Right on. So, and then the second expansion, the third product, is Legion of Gold, which, Dave, you mentioned you have, but haven't had much chance to look at. Tracy, I don't know that you have this one.
I have it. I haven't read through it all yet.
Okay.
But I have it here.
I can talk about it still.
Yeah, I mean, I can talk briefly about it.
Yeah.
My general impression of it, because I'm much the same way. I've done my quick initial read through, but haven't gone in depth with it yet. But my initial impression was that it seems to be really more of the same of what's in Famine and Fargo, right? You've got yet more origins, you've got more monsters, you've got another adventure, you've got more of to the tokens, you've got more of the maps. It's just taking what they did in Famine and Fargo and giving you more of it, which, you know, for what it is, I think that's not a bad goal, a bad thing to provide.
Introduce one other new system.
Uh-huh. Go ahead.
It introduces like a job system where you say, well, my character is a bounty hunter, and you actually get feats as you level up, because in the core gamer world, unlike D&D, like there are no feats, that kind of thing. But this introduces a system where you get kind of like smaller bonuses as you level up related to your occupation. And again, it's another just totally optional thing that you could add more to your character's background, you know, and they're appropriately post-apocalyptically flavored, you know, things that as much reason as there is in Gamma Terra, you know, there are things that these characters would do on a regular basis. So that's just another thing, you know, that if you want a little more customization over characters and stuff, the options there.
Hold on. So we keep tossing around these setting concepts. You know, we've mentioned in the intro the Big Mistake and the Hadron Collider, and Dave just mentioned Gamma Terra and all these things. Mike, can you give us a rundown on what the story of Gamma World is, just in case people are confused about what the heck we're talking about?
Sure. So the main idea is that the Large Hadron Collider screwed up and caused a rift in the space-time continuum that took a whole bunch of different alternate Earths and smashed them all together. And in any, you know, if you imagine all the possible realities that could have existed, and now they all exist in one place. So what's really great about that setting is pretty much everything can fit into it. There's almost no story you can think of that you can't fit into Gamma World somewhere. So that it's set, I think, what did they say? A couple hundred years after what they call the big mistake, which was that moment of collapse. And in many of the worlds, there were nuclear wars. And in some worlds, the monkeys took over. And, every world has some new strange, strange new effect. One of the things they recommend you do is take your hometown and turn your hometown into a setting for it. So that way there's a lot of realism to it. I did that with little pieces of Washington, D.C. for the Gamma World mini campaign that I ran. And I remember that one of the adventures they ran at PAX actually had the Seattle PAX Convention Center as a setting for the adventure that was running at PAX, which I thought was kind of interesting, that the building you're sitting in is actually the building that you're playing in the game. So it's a pretty great world to tell stories in.
Cool. So could I recreate Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles with it?
Absolutely.
Sweet. <Yep.
laughs> It wouldn't be a problem. In fact, that'd be pretty good. You know, the Seven Samurai with the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles would be a perfect story for Gamma World.
Done. You're running that for me at Gen Con.
I got another one to run for you at Gen Con.
Really? All right. I'm there.
Yeah.
That might be my first chance to play Gamma World. I don't know how hyped my players are about trying out this game.
You know, if you can convince them to sit down at the table, they'll have a good time. I haven't seen a group yet that sat down and played this and didn't really have a blast.
So on that note, somebody tell me,
so to speak,
what's Gamma World good for? You know, what kind of a game is this? Is this, you know, the new D&D? Am I going to sit down and play this for three, 4 years running a big campaign? Is it just for one shots, or how do I do Gamma World right? Nobody.
I can speak to it, but I'll let Dave talk.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it really is designed for shorter campaigns. The fact that you level up pretty quickly, it only goes to 10 levels. And, you know, for some people, the humor is only going to have a kick for so long. But being in a Gamma World game right now that's already gone through 3+ levels, I think the game has a lot more staying power than people might give it credit for. You know, like Mike was saying, if you get a group that sits down and starts playing it, you know, you can build characters and, you know, put in character goals and stuff to really draw you in and keep you interested from session to session. You know, it's something where you wouldn't necessarily expect it to have a lot of staying power, and it really is good, you know, especially with how fast it is to roll characters, you know, for the one-shot mini campaign or whatever. But it really, it does have some staying power too, you know, maybe not 30 levels of staying power without some heavy modifications, but, you know, could happen.
Okay.
I ran about 7 sessions in a row. I ran a mini Gamma World campaign, and we hit about 7. I had planned to go all the way 1 to 10 with 1 level each night for 10 nights, and we got to about 7, and I was kind of getting a little bored with it. I wasn't actually that crazy about the adventure in Famine and Fargo. It just didn't grab me as much. And I think my problem is that I don't really like the truly zany stories, which is a hard thing to do in Gamma World, to not have a truly zany story. We hit about 7, and I think at that point I was kind of done. I was ready to move on and go back to D&D. But I think it's an excellent, excellent one-shot system. I'm absolutely bringing it wherever I go.
Very cool. So
I also think it's good for getting your players to try to improvise a little bit, because your armor and stuff is not, it's not like you're picking chainmail and a shield. You have to kind of figure out what your armor means for you in the world. And so that's always nice too.
That's right, because in the equipment, they only list armor as, what, light armor and heavy armor?
Right, and same with weapons. So you have to figure out what that stuff is.
Same with weapons,
and,
right.
And getting players to think that way, I think, could also then help feed back into a regular D&D game.
Yeah, I guess I get the impression that Gamma World in general sort of encourages players to really improvise and combine stuff and reskin things and whatever, you know. One of the really cool examples I heard early on when the first Gamma World product came out was, you know, I got a Hawkoid stone creature origin and decided, oh, well, naturally, of course, that's a gargoyle. And, you know, that sort of solidified mm-hmm. for me exactly how this process of character creation works for Gamma World, and how you just take two things that may not seem like they go together, but you can make it work really well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had a psionic android, and of course I said, that's absolutely a Grimace from a Grimace automaton from McDonald's. I mean, what else would it be?
I was thinking Brain
and his goal was...
I was thinking Brain in a Jar, but... yeah, what was his goal?
He was like Highlander. His goal was to kill every other McDonald's automaton on the planet. And he had killed a few. He had Ronald McDonald's head as a flail. And he wore the Hamburglar's hat and cloak.
Oh, man. You went for the big
there
ones.
There can be only one.
You went for the big ones first, though. You've like already taken out the boss.
Yeah, and the problem was Dave then killed him.
It's Gamma World. It happens. Can't trust those porkers.
He killed him. He left him in a factory dead.
And Mayor McCheese was laughing all the way.
Yeah, right. Mayor McCheese was, you know, Emperor McCheese. He had upgraded after the big mistake. Emperor McCheese had a great big lair.
Okay, so it sounds like Gamma World is good for short games, silly games, short campaigns. If you're looking for a serious game, maybe not Gamma World, unless you do some significant reskinning. Just because I get the impression the random nature makes it difficult to do a real serious game for very long. Does that sound accurate?
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot you can do with it. I mean, what I like about it is like every plot to every movie you've ever seen can somehow fit into Gamma World. So you can always keep the story pretty interesting. But yeah, when you have like telekinetic rats as your primary, you know, character, it's a little hard to kind of build stories around that.
Right. So, and I think it's worth noting that randomness comes from not only the origins, but from the card mechanics. You know, you're randomly drawing mutations and technology and what have you. And I think it's worth noting that while all three of these products come with cards, there's sort of a thought that if you're going to play much Gamma World, you're probably going to go out and buy more cards. They sell, you know, collectible sealed booster packs of Gamma World cards. So I know that for some people might be a little bit of a turnoff, but I'm guessing you could probably play it pretty straight. Mike, did you buy extra cards, or did you just play straight out of the ones that are in the box?
So I only had the two boosters that I had to play for Dave to kill off my character. So I just threw those right into my set, and they ran just fine. And I haven't seen a need to buy any more cards. I didn't have players who were trying to build their own decks or anything like that. We all just drew from a common deck, and sometimes they get stuff that was wildly inappropriate, but sometimes that was half the fun. So I didn't see a need for the cards, but I could see if people really wanted to keep playing this that they would refresh the cards. There's nothing particularly wrong with them.
Yeah, and I guess that actually brings up a good point, because I mentioned how I hesitate to try to use Gamma World for a serious game, but they do have in the first product where they talk about building decks and how you would do that you could build, you could have players all buy cards and build their own decks with things that would make sense for their character, right? At which point the randomness suddenly becomes a little bit less random, a little more focused on their character. So maybe you could pull off a little bit more serious of a game with some fairly minor reskinning if you don't mind buying a lot of extra cards.
Yeah. Well, and you also could just have the not have to do the characters themselves randomly either. People could just create their own characters. And you could still keep some of the randomness in the rolling the other ability scores, because you get your two primary ones fixed by which origin you have, and then you roll the rest. So,
right on. Now, all of us have two of the products, and everybody's played except me, so I've been trying to ask a lot of the questions because you all have more experience playing the game than I do. Mike, you don't have the third product, so do you have any questions about it that you'd like us to talk about?
Yeah, I do. So I know that with, there are more origins in Legion of Gold. Is that correct, or is it only the classes?
It's got more origins.
There are 8 more.
So how do you, right, there are 8 more origins. So how do you select, like with the first 2 books, you roll a D6 to decide if you're picking from one book or the other. And because there's 20 in each of those books, it's a nice even distribution. You know, so the randomness works correctly. How do you select from one of the 8? How are those other 8 added into the original 40?
There's a chart.
There's a chart.
Yeah.
So how does that work?
Go ahead, Dave.
Like, do you roll?
I don't have it in front of me, but it balances it out pretty well. It breaks everything down by, you know, roll on the, like, it takes into account every combination that you could have too. Like, if you only have Gamma World and Legion of Gold, but not Famine, you roll on this chart. If you have all 3, you roll on this other chart.
Oh, okay.
You know, it just uses different.
Got a chart with all of the origins on it.
Right. And it's not a D6, as I recall. I think it's like a D20, and just like the last 2 then would send you to Legion of Gold because it has fewer origins in it. And so they do balance it that way.
You do a D12 to figure out which book you're gonna pull from, and then you do the appropriate one for the book, you know, because Legion only has 8. So you probably roll D12 twice to figure out which origin, and then you go to that origin table and you roll either a d20 or a d8 depending on which origin it is, which book it is.
I mean, not to be a nerd, but doesn't that mean that you're going to have more people from the last book instead of the former 2?
No. They're not weighted.
Right? Right, but there's only 8 of them.
1 through...
Where the other 2 books have 20 each.
Right, they're not, like, rolling for a specific book, they're not all weighted the same. You're more likely to roll the ones with 20 options.
Right. Like one through 5?
I have it open.
Oh, Tracy has
I have it open.
It's legitimate, so let's let her talk.
Okay, 1 through 5 is the original. 6 through 10 is Famine and Fargo, and 11 and 12 are Legion of Gold.
Okay,
I get it.
So you're more likely to roll. Yeah.
You're dividing it by 4, basically, for each one, and then that just tells you which chart to roll.
Do you need to do some calculus, Mike, to make sure that's balanced?
Yeah, it doesn't sound balanced, but it's not. You know, it's not up to me. It was actually I didn't buy the third because I was. Yeah, I guess. I didn't buy the third because I was kind of Gamma Worlded out at that point, and the things that it had in the book, in that one, were not things that I really felt like were missing from the rest of it. Like, I was like, oh, great, feats, you know. Now I can get my nice, simple characters that were able to roll up in 10 minutes, and now I can make them complicated again. And it just didn't seem like something I really wanted to add into my Gamma World game.
Well, ironically enough, because it's for the higher levels, I think 7 through 9 or so. You could almost say that that's the epic level expansion to Gamma World. So if you are looking for something to cover you through those levels, then that would be the book to buy.
So here's what I want. I want somebody like, I don't know, critical-hits.com to publish for me, because they've already published a lot of Gamma World stuff. I want you guys to take just all of the origins and make one giant percentile chart that just has them all, so then you fix all those balance issues and it makes it much more streamlined.
Right. Well, I can tell you.
can you do that for me?
Yeah, sort of. So we already have this Gamma World web app called the Junculator, is for using to... And for me personally, I'll step back a second. So, like, in the first book, you've got your starting gear that you roll on a certain number of times. And that's supposed to be more of your staple kind of goods. And then you have ancient junk, which is kind of more the weird, obscure, like, oh, I've got comic books, or, you know, I've got a deck of playing cards or whatever. Something that seems like it's less useful. And then Famine and Fargo also has extra of those tables, so you get more options. But in play, we found that a lot of the starting gear was just pretty boring. You got all these duplicates, like, oh, we have, you know, four keelboats in the party. Like, you know, it provided some interesting things. You know, the fact that we all had them meant, okay, maybe we're, you know, we hang out in the bay all the time. But overall, in actual play, like, the difference between that gear and ancient junk, you know, it just wasn't good enough. So with the help of Matt Dukes, who writes his veneer on the site, who did the programming, and Jared von Hinman, who, you know, does art for WotC, did the art on Mike's book and, you know, all sorts of other stuff. He had access to all previous editions of Gamma World. And so between the three of us, we made this web app to be able to generate random ancient junk and just replace all of those charts so that you just got, you know, crazy stuff to start your character with. And as you went along, and, you know, I use it in every game I run now, and, you know, tooting my own horn, but I think it's awesome. And
it's not just tooting your own horn, it is awesome.
Yeah. Well, thank you. It's not just tooting my own horn. So that means we have the technology now to build other Gamma World web apps built into the site. And one of the ones I have been thinking about is one that generates you to random origins, not just all the ones from the books officially, but, like, there's a whole bunch of really great custom ones that, like, people on the Wizards boards have made. And, you know, you could just put that into a huge thing, and it doesn't matter how many entries there are, because this thing will just spit out two of them, you know?
Right. That would be awesome. I want you to do that. And if you can do it in the next week, if you can do it in the next week, we'll link to it in the show notes.
Huh. We'll see what happens.
Yeah.
Maybe in an alternate reality that will collapse into this one.
The one where horses rule the earth. And eagles.
Right.
One thing I noticed is so Wizards of the Coast put up a very excellent Gamma World character sheet character generator that does all the math for you, randomly selects the origins. It's if you're doing one shots and you want to pregen some guys, just to have them ready. Not that you really need to have a lot of time to pregen, because making new characters is half the fun. But if you did want to have some pregen, so you could really just jump right into the game, it's an excellent, excellent character sheet generator, but it does not appear to have anything from the Legion of Gold. I don't see anything in here for that, so that was a little interesting. But that said, it's still a wonderful, wonderful tool.
Hold on.
That and the Junculator.
And for the
I just wish it had a tie into the Junculator.
And for the record, my most recent drawing from the Junculator is the an intact pocket calculator. So that's
pretty mundane for that.
That could come in handy.
That's going to be useful. Although earlier I pulled out a mount still fresh. And for whatever reason, the picture that came back was some guy standing on a mountain. I suppose that's a mount.
The Junculator is especially awesome when it makes no sense whatsoever.
Right.
Yeah, right. I love the art. The artwork is great. I have to do it on an iPad and then show everybody the art.
Tracy's pointing out to me in chat here that now that I have the pocket calculator, I can spell out boobs.
How about a rusty Wicked Witch costume? One of the pieces of advice that I had heard that I would recommend everybody playing Gamma World is not to think about what your character is until after you've rolled your random junk. Because a lot of times the random junk defines your character. Like, as soon as you realize that you have a rusty Wicked Witch costume, you might completely change what your character is like.
That's totally.
That's a good idea. Dave, what were you going to say?
Yeah,
we have a standing rule that in pretty much any way that you can use ancient junk, even in a, like, barely passable fashion, will give a bonus. What was awesome was the Famine and Fargo game I ran last weekend. They had, like, a box of cake mix that they've been carrying around. and then finally they came across this, like, sick pig that they were trying to, help make better to convince its owner to help them. And they were like, well, why don't we feed it this cake mix? And I was like, okay, that will do it.
Yeah. What other various fun little resources are out there for Gamer World that people know about?
I think those are the two big ones that I used, the Junculator and the Gamma World character builder. Those are the ones that, you know, those are pretty much all I needed. Everything else I got right out of the box and it worked great.
More talking about my stuff, you know, we have a guide that links to a whole bunch of different things, like different character sheets. If you want a different layout, you know, there's some really nice ones out there. Tools for, like, I wrote an article about another way to, like, take your hometown and turn it into the Gamma World version by getting the help of your players. New monsters, you know, plots, other house rules and stuff. We've got a whole guide on the site that links to a whole bunch of that.
Dave, didn't you write a post about how to run a game with no preparation whatsoever, like just sitting down there and working with your players and coming up with the story that was eventually going to lead to the adventure? Can you tell us more about that?
Yep, that's the one. Yep. I call it the Gamerizer, and it's basically you get everyone in the game to write down like one piece of the area you're in, and it can be super specific or it can be kind of a general thing. But something that ties into the area that everyone's familiar with. And then you shuffle those all up and deal them back out, and everyone takes one of their origin pieces and then connects whatever they've been dealt to that. So, like, when I was playtesting it, someone had wrote down, like, the Westminster Public Library, you know, which was nearby, and then it got shuffled up and dealt to somebody who had the Felinoid origin. And so he wrote, well, the library is taken over by a secret society of cats who are seeking their ball of yarn. And everyone does that and gives it to the GM, who kind of puts it in an order and says, okay, here's my plot, you know, and kind of uses those to link together a couple encounters and make an adventure from there. So it's like no prep, and you're getting the players to help you, and it's ways to do weird things to the city you're in.
Right on. I know Tracy, I think it was, at one point pointed me to the 1-inch Square blog that has put together some character origin cards as well that people might find useful, where they've sort of just taken all the origins from the Gamer World core rules and the Famine and Fargo set and made little printable cards, so you could just have that at the table with all of your information ready to go. So that's the only other information I have, I guess, about what's out there for Gamer World, but I haven't been looking as hard as some of the rest of you guys, so.
Yeah, those are really useful. I forgot about those, and that's something that we've used at our game that really helps.
I could have sworn I just had somebody mention earlier as we were recording this episode pop up on Twitter saying that they were seeing Gamer World condition cards, but there wasn't a link, so I didn't get to find out what that was about. So it sounds like we've talked Gamma World. Should we summarize our thoughts and wrap up?
Sounds good.
It sounds like we like Gamma World for short-term campaigns or one-shots that don't mind being a little bit silly, and maybe with a little more work could be a little less silly. Is that?
Yeah, that's pretty accurate.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you definitely need the core set. How badly do you need Famine and Fargo if you want to play Gamma World?
I like Famine and Fargo. I think that, you know, as soon as you kind of double the amount of monsters you've got and double your origins and getting the extra maps, I was very happy to get Famine and Fargo. And the adventure, I don't think I did justice to the adventure when I ran it. I kind of had things in my head I wanted to do more. But it's nice to have an adventure that's a good sized adventure.
Okay.
So I thought it was worth the money.
So what about Legion of Gold? I mean, on one hand, I guess it's more of the same. So that's maybe not a great endorsement for it. But on the other hand, it's more of the same. So if you're playing Gamer World on a regular basis and you need more monsters and you need more tokens and you need some more ideas, then maybe Legion of Gold is a good purchase for you. Does that seem fair?
I didn't buy it, so I don't know how good it is. Yeah,
Dave.
I mean, like, you've sunk all this money into, you know, a hardcover for a specific part of the D&D world. You can spring for the three boxes that completely make up Gamma World. You know,
because so far as we know, there won't ever be more Gamma World. I know that was the plan. I get the impression that Gamma World has been much more successful than they expected. So I wouldn't be surprised if they announced, you know, that there was going to be another expansion or whatever. But I don't know. I think maybe it's a good idea to just stick with the three and be done with it. And just relish the success that you've had instead of trying to do more with it.
Yeah, that sounds fair.
I know that I heard that a lot of stores were selling out of the Gamma World booster packs. So that'll be an interesting thing, too.
Yeah, I noticed that at my store. I was there the other day, and I was thinking about picking up a couple of fortune card packs just to play with them a little bit. And I looked at the Gamer World section as well, and they have, you know, a box out for the Gamer World packs, and half of them were already gone, and they hadn't, you know, they obviously didn't have any more, or they would have restocked it. So I think they're doing pretty well with Gamer World.
Yeah.
The cards are awesome.
Okay, well, I think we have a call, a voicemail that we want to listen to wrap things up with here. So why don't we go into that, and then we'll just let people know. We had a bunch of people call in because our January contest entry for the phone line was to call in with your thoughts about Gamer World. And so we're going to have all the rest of those run at the end of the episode. So feel free to listen to those, and it's going to be another five or six people telling you their short thoughts on Gamer World and what they like it for and what they don't like it for and what have you. They all tend to run, you know, one to 3 minutes, I think. So, but we did want to respond to this one and try to solve this guy's problems.
I heard you was going to talk about Gamma World, so I'm calling again. You may or may not be aware, I keep hens, and I was wanting to get them bigger and stronger, so as they could produce more offspring and more meat. It hasn't gone quite as I'd planned. I tried gamma radiation using your standard linear particle accelerator, like you'll find on most farms, and it went pretty well at first, but they've gotten kind of big, and there's a couple of them are up to 10 foot, and they're starting to frighten the neighbors. So I was kind of wondering if in that there Gamma World, if there's any power cards as could be applied to the situation to kind of mitigate things. I don't mind them getting kind of big, but I'd really prefer not to have to go into hiding from the ASPCA again. So if y'all could address that, I'd really appreciate it. Much obliged. Thank you very much.
All right. So the guy's got hens. He's actually accidentally made them too large, and he wants to know if there's any good powers for, mitigating that problem. You guys have played. You've seen the powers in action. What power is going to do the best job of cutting down his giant hens?
Well, I think I've got basically one word, or maybe two words that could help him out, and that would be cobalt radiation. In the Gamma Terra, the Earth from Six Sigma Monkey Pants, a Russian doomsday device fell that was built using a cobalt reactor, and cobalt works really well against anything that was hit with gamma radiation. And the nice thing about cobalt is any of those pain-in-the-ass ASPCA inspectors are going to fall over dead, you know, probably within 50 miles of the chickens. So that would probably solve the problem.
That's very convenient. And if anybody doesn't know, that voice is coming from, or that call is coming in from a fellow who sometimes makes appearances, I believe, over at the Great Debate podcast. So people should go check him out. All right. Well, I think that's Gamer World.
So that's episode 166. Thanks to Noble Knight and our guests, Dave Chalker and Mike Shea.
Dave, where can we find you on the internet?
Thank you.
Always at critical-hits.com. I'm one of the Dungeon Master guys on the Dungeon Master Guys podcast, and on Twitter at Dave the Game.
So you're hard to get a hold of. And our other guest, yeah. Mike Shea, where do we find you?
SlyFlourish.com and Twitter.com/SlyFlourish.
As usual, although I think we're going to have three episodes this month that all feature you.
Yay!
Because the others are advice episodes, and you do our advice segment, so people get to hear from you a lot.
I can't get enough of me.
You're pretty fantastic, Mike. Anyway, and if people want to get a hold of Tracy and I, you can email thetomeshow@gmail.com, visit the forums at gamershavenpodcast.com, and call the Tomes Bizline at 919-BIZTOME with your thoughts, questions, or comments for upcoming episodes.
And if you want to enter the contest in February, don't forget to swing by the forums to discuss how relationships have played a role in your games, and call in the Bizline at 919-BIZTOME to let us know what D&D accessories you use at your game table. Cards, maps, tokens, minis, give it all to us.
Awesome. And have you swung by the forum lately? There's a couple of people that have been posting about relationships in games.
Sweet.
One person talking about how he's never really had a romantic relationship in a game, and the other person saying how a game actually helped him in his relationship with his wife.
Nice.
So, it's the best of all relationship worlds over at the Tome Show forums. People should also make sure to consider checking out the Tome's Amazon store for products that we discussed on this show and more. The show gets part of the proceeds, and that helps keep us on the air.
And links for things mentioned in the show can be found in the show notes at our website at thetomeshow.com.
This has been episode 166, where we survived the big mistake, mutated into plastic engineered humans, and rode the crazy train in
the Tome, the Tome, the Tome, the Tome, the Tome, the Tome, the Tome.
Hi, this is Ryan Costello Jr., and I'm calling in about my impressions of Gamma World. What I like best about Gamma World is the casual nature of the game. I'm usually a person that can only really commit myself to a single game system at a time. I like long-term campaigns, and I like regularly meeting with my group. So although I'm interested in other games like the Star Wars Saga Edition or the Dresden Files, I can't commit an extra day a week to playing on a long-term campaign, even though I'm in two regular Dungeons & Dragons games at the moment. The thing about Gamma World and the way that character creation is streamlined, the way that character life is, it's so fragile, and that if a character dies, that's just part of the fun, and that you're just supposed to go out on one or two wacky missions and then move on. The way that it can be a very casual game means that instead of needing to find more time for a long-running campaign, that I could just get together the same way I get together for a board game night, I get together for a Gamma World night. I think that is probably the greatest strength of Gamma World, that it is a casual game rather than another role-playing game that I would need to commit a great deal of time to enjoy and get the full experience of.
Hi, Jeff, Tracy, Sam. Just calling in to talk about Gamma World as per the contest coming up. This is Palman from the forums, and here you need some discussion points on Gamma World. So I've only played Gamma World once so far, and that is actually my first experience with Gamma World. I haven't played any other editions, but I played in the recent game day, and I had a blast with it. It was a fantastic product, very well done. It was a lot of fun, really easy to make characters. We had a full-on game day at one of our local stores where we played some LFR and then had the game day for Gamma World, which a few of us stuck around for, and I thought I was going to be worn out by the end of the day, but Gamma World was pretty easy to play. Rolling up the character is very easy, and even that is a fun part of the game. We had some great laughs rolling up characters, including one of our players rolled up a engineered humanoid that had a super high intelligence and absolutely no strength. So we made him a talking brain on a dolly that one of us pushed around. It was quite fun. So we had quite, we even had Last in the character generation. We had a great time with it, played it up. My suggestions is that this can be a great tool for getting some of the players to come out of their shells. We had quite a few players who had limited experience or were a little bit more shy around the table, and they had a blast, really came out, really played it up. And I think that it can be great to get people kind of out of their shells, get some of those shy players talking a little bit more. So those are my thoughts. Have a great time discussing it next month, and I look forward to hearing the show. Thanks.
Hi, Jeff. Big fan of the show. I'm calling to say that Gamma World isn't something I'm interested in. I've been playing D&D since I was in middle school, way back in the day, probably started about... I've played all the editions, but never got into Gamma World. It's never been in my realm of interest. Too random, too silly. I don't want a character to accidentally get flippers or something. That just doesn't interest me. And especially with the very limited time I have to game now with two kids and, you know, a whole life and whatnot, I barely get to play regular D&D. So Gamma World, not so much. Thanks. Bye.
Hello, this is Aaron Clooney. Since you asked about it on the last episode, I wanted to give a little bit of my opinion about Gamma World. This is a really interesting product to me, and there's a couple reasons why. The first one is that, quite simply, with the D&D 4th edition system, that one of the first things that I and my friends thought was, wow, it would be really neat to try to do this with some other genre. I see what this engine that they put together that seems so solid for D&D fantasy can do. And, you know, Gamma World is basically the very first real solid attempt at that, and, you know, it's turned out to be a really fun game. Second thing that comes to mind is, and I'm very slightly internet famous for translating a Japanese tabletop RPG called Made RPG. MadeRPG.com, that's a little plug. So here's the thing. In games like early D&D, D&D, say, 3.5 and before, I don't really care for randomness in character creation. I'm the type of person who, you know, comes up with a very distinct character concept ahead of time and wants to be able to kind of build that in the system. So having to kind of, I know that some people find a lot of appeal in, just rolling the dice and seeing what they get. But to me, if the things that you're rolling the dice for are just your attributes and your hit points, then that doesn't really add anything interesting to the character per se. And, in stark contrast to that, if you look at Made the Role-Playing Game, that game has ridiculous levels of randomness, but it's all tables that give you really strange, interesting things to do with your character. So, you do roll your attributes randomly in Made RPG, but you also roll what are called special qualities. So it's like your made character can end up being, a cat girl who's the albino who killed her lover. It could be like the... One of the ones that actually came up in a real game was like a cyborg fox spirit, and just really staggeringly random stuff like that. And on top of that, it has rules for random events, which can totally send the entire story flying off in random directions. To me, especially in the character creation, at least, character creation and the alpha tech or alpha mutation or omega tech cards, Gamma World really embraces randomness in the right way, that it, it makes the game more interesting without, hamstringing your characters.
Hey, Jeff. My name is Jay. I go by Akasahedron on the forums. Just leaving you my thoughts on Gamma World. I really like it for one-shots, which I think has pretty much been the consensus of the Twitterati as well as the ether webs that you have mentioned in the past. We've played both the Gamma World one-shot, the Worldwide Game Day, and the one-shot that comes with it, as well as a modified scenario from another one, that an older adventure. And we've had fun in all three cases. All three have been pretty much one-shots, rolled up new characters. The card mechanic is interesting. I really enjoy that for the particular one-shots that we have run. How that works vis-a-vis, say, the fortune cards for regular play will be interesting to see how that comes across. But the fortune, but the Gamma World cards work really well for just kind of entertaining tidbits, you might say, entertaining powers and things that go off during the middle of the combat. Really enjoyed WotC's game day. They had the website that was up that did the security cameras and things like that. It was quite interesting to see that interactivity within an adventure. Anyways, just my thoughts there, and hope to hear more about Gamma World in an upcoming podcast. Thanks, bye.
What's up, guys? This is Greg. I run the dumpstat.blogspot.com. I'm also a reviewer on Stargazer's World, and I was calling in with your question about Gamma World. I wanted to say that I'm reviewing the product right now, and I really am enjoying it. I picked it up on vacation back in Canada from my life here as a gamer in Japan. So you're getting a very, very long distance call right now. I really like the game. I like the Origins. Haven't picked up the two expansions yet, but those will be coming in the future. So I really like all the artwork, the books, the maps, the tokens. I think really this product is pretty good, especially when you consider what you're getting in that box. But I did have a question regarding the disappearance of minis from D&D 4E, and I wanted to hear what you guys had to say about that in hopefully a future podcast. So, thanks a lot. Take care. Bye.
I'm on the wall.